It is a great pleasure. I feel a fondness for Warwick. As I said in my after-dinner speech when I was up there to get an honorary degree, that the history department had done an outstanding job because I had no idea that they would have discovered that my ancestors came from Warwickshire, from Draycott. Now, I don't know if any, does anybody know Draycott? Has anybody ever been to Draycott in Warwickshire? Well, you know about the reservoir. But Draycott, I learned, is about six houses in a tiny little village without even a pub because I went with my English wife and we drove and drove trying to find this little place and we finally found it and I thought, this is it? My heavens, no wonder they got out. Anyway, I'm here to talk about elections and about the United States presidential election specifically, a little bit about the Senate and the House if you want me to. But I thought I would bring along some slides. And so here we are at the Royal Society on the American presidential election. I was going to kind of duck Oz, the subplot here, which was who's going to win and why, because I thought it's a little too close to call. But now that you've let the cat out of the bag, I guess I've got to do it. Polling's a very simple business. All you have to do is ask the right sample, the right questions, and add up the figures correctly. There is a fourth connection, though, and that's to get it reported accurately and quickly and all of that, because it's a mercurial thing, and it's very difficult to hold in your hand for very long because it's very slippery, as shown by the debates. This was just a remarkable election in terms of the impact of the debates, and unlike Great Britain, where we had debates last time for the first time, in the United States they've been going since 1960. And 1960 to 2012. So, you know, Britain's catching up, but not that fast on it. These are the states, and this is 2012, and those are the electoral votes, rather fuzzy, but that's all right. And I have some questions for you to start. First, how many Republicans started the race? What would you say? Seven? 13? Any more guesses? Six? 52. There were 52 people, guys and girls, who signed up in at least one state in the primary contest for the Republican Party to be president of the United States. So they were how many Republican candidates started the race. So with that preface, I'll give you another one. How many led in the polls at one time or another? No. The polls, yeah, where that primary was being held?
Six.
11. And who do you want to win? Let's take a poll. Hands up, those of who want Romney. You know, I usually do this as a trio with the head of Republicans abroad and the head of Democrats abroad. And I was very amused. I think it was the Labor Conference when they were booing poor old Tom, the head of Republicans abroad. And when I asked that question, his was the only hand that went up. Okay, Obama? Right. While I'm taking polls, how many of those of you who have never been polled and you don't know anybody's ever been polled? Hands up. Right, quite a lot. Now, those of you who have been polled, put up your hands. Now, keep them up. Now, the rest of you look around. You'll never again be able to say that you've never been polled. You don't know anybody's ever been polled. Good. Okay, so who do you think will win? Now, that's going to be close. Hands up. Romney, who thinks he's going to win? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Seven? This is a left lot, isn't it? Right. And how many think Obama's going to win? Well, you may be right, both of you. And there's one more I'm going to ask you. From Cameron to Letterman, where was the Magna Carta signed? What? Where is it? Ronnie Mead? Wrong. Correct answer? Nowhere. That was close. It wasn't signed, it was sealed. It wasn't until the 40s. Do we have any medieval historians here? Well, it wasn't, yeah. I think you'll recognize this. I think from my reading, there wasn't any king up until the 14th century who actually signed an act or a document. They either put their hand on it to signify that their seal should go on it, or they passed their sleeve over the document. And that's what King John did. So there's a bit you didn't know, but I am chairing the 800th anniversary of the Magna Carta, so I had to get that in somewhere. Okay, remember the debates? Yeah, who doesn't? You remember all these people? Think back. Who did they want to beat Obama? Anyone, quite. Who's that? Anybody else? John Huntsman, well done. I heard a few people, but not that many. Anybody got it wrong? I don't think so. Herman Cain, right. Yeah, I knew that would get everybody. It was that wink that did her in for my wife, I'll tell you that. When she saw it, she said, nobody can vote for anybody that does that on television. Made her a millionaire, though. Rick Santorum, you've been paying attention, young man. Not Rick Perry. I had eight, and I had to leave somebody. I had to leave a lot out, but all these people led at one time or another. And Mitt Romney? Ron Paul. More people got that than some of the others. Michelle Bachmann. Exactly so. Okay, that's what it looked like, and you can see some of it at the beginning. At the end of September, when I started paying really close attention, the thing that you've got as a handout is the thing that's just gone up on the website of the American Magazine today. From memory, I think it's American, or is it The American? I don't know. I tweeted it today, and I'm at Robert Worcester, one word, capital R, capital W. I don't know if that means anything for these, but I've been doing for 10 or 12 months now, as I did in 2008 and 2004, a track, a monthly column, 1,500 words or 2,000 words or 800 words, depending on what I felt like. And at the beginning of September, Romney was ahead, 23. Rick Perry was behind, just behind, at 20. Cain, 14, and Gingrich, 9. Then Cain was the one, and the lines on the graph, I didn't bother to graph it, just went like that, bobbling along, because it was an ABR, anybody but Romney. And the Republican Party did not want Romney, who is a moderate on one day and to the left on another and to the right on another, depending on which way the wind's blowing. Anybody but Romney was who the Republican Party wanted in the majority. And the majority didn't get their way because the last man standing, of course, was Mitt Romney. So you go through November, Gingrich came up to the fore, and then he faded. Ron Paul was in there with a bit of support, but he won the Iowa caucus, and he won on a recount with 8 votes. There were more people in last year's Kent County Council election who voted than in the state of Iowa. And yet the Kent County Council election wasn't on the front page of every newspaper in the world, but the Iowa caucus was. And, of course, it's pretty meaningless, except it's so meaningful in terms of raising money. It's so meaningful in terms of momentum. It raises the profile. And so they start out there, and they'll be out there probably on the 7th of November, the candidates who have their eye on 2012. We'll probably spend that day after they've got up in the morning or in the afternoon. They'll probably spend that time in Iowa, at least a lot of time between that time and 2014. New Hampshire primary followed it immediately. That's more meaningful because it was really real people and it was really, really a contest. And then you had the South Carolina and Florida, and then they started bouncing along in Super Tuesday on March the 6th, by which time, in fact, between the 6th and the 13th, it was pretty well decided. And I'll come back to that in a moment. Then you have in red and in blue to remind me to tell you that it doesn't work the same way that we do with Labor in red and the Tories in blue. And by the way, I'm sorry I talk funny, but I don't know what to do about it. It's only been 42, 43 years that I've been trying to speak British English. I'm multilingual, but not accent, not by accent. And the Democratic National Convention in blue. was August the 27th to September the 6th. And I'll show you the track on that, which has not had a lot of publicity, but I think it's fairly interesting, particularly for a well-educated and thoughtful group as you are. Then you had the first national debate, presidential debate, the vice presidential debate, the national presidential debate, and the second one, and then the third one. And then November the 6th, we're all looking forward to. I certainly am. And this is the usual election, British election, usual length. And you can see by contrast what it is. It's a little artificial. We have the long election for a year or so, but it's nothing like the four-year contest because you've got congressmen who run every 2 years, and they start running the day after the election because they've got to raise the money and they've got a lot of competition, and off they go. And then the senators are also, there's a senator two out of three in each state because they've got a six-year term, and they split third, third, and a third as their time is up. About 92%, something like that, of congressmen are reelected every time they run. It's run, of course, in there rather than stand as we do here. Now, I said at Warwick University open lecture, I don't know how many, was there anybody who was here at my open lecture on the 11th of January? I said the election of the Republican Congress in 2010 will be a really strong thing. For some reason, I don't have access to Obama's private polling, although one of my students from LSE is number two on his speechwriting team. And I had breakfast with him in the White House 6 months ago or so when I happened to be in Washington. I thought he would run, and it would be a very strong campaign theme that Obama would use, that it was the Republican Congress that kept him from doing all these things that he promised to do. And he hasn't. Now, whether he's saving it for the end, I don't know, but if he's going to use it, he'd better come out with it. But I thought that would be a powerful, powerful thing that he should be doing. I said the improving economy in 2011-12, and it is improving in the United States. And although the Republican challenger, Mitt Romney, has used that as his principal campaign, like 80% of his campaign has been about the economy, it's a difficult game for him to play. Republicans are certainly a divided party. The ABR had an impact, no question about that, particularly with right-wing Republicans who I would argue will very likely stay home. Now, they're the natural core supporters for Mitt Romney. And yet, at the 2008, 23% of Americans said they would never vote for a Mormon. And when you look at the profile of the people who were of that attitude, you find that they are the natural core voters, by and large, for the Republican candidate. And yet, if you look at the states they're in and the racial profile of those states and the voting profile of those states, black and white, you see that they are in the same states. 44% of Americans say they're born-again Christians. Those are the people who say they'd never vote for a Mormon, by and large. And you add it up, and you think, are they going to be bigoted racially? Are they going to be bigoted religiously? What are they going to do? Have a hard time deciding, aren't they? And I think a lot of them will stay home. Nobody, I think, at least I've not seen it, and I read a lot about the American election, and nobody would argue that Barrack is a formidable campaigner, and Michelle is as well. And by the way, I said on that occasion that I thought President Obama would win with just over 300 electoral college votes. So that's what I'm hanging my hat on. Okay, in January, what we call trial heats, they call matchups. I told you I was bilingual. The only one where there was a slight edge against Obama was Mitt Romney in January, 47-45. Look how far Gingrich was down, 8 points. Look how far Santorum was, half that, 4. You had Ron Paul the closest behind if it was a two-party or a two-candidate race. Long way, 7 points for Rick Perry, and John Huntsman, 7 points again. So in March, after the decision was pretty well made, You could read it pretty clearly at that point. There were just four people left standing. Huntsman was gone, and Perry was gone. Now, what happened when the conventions came and went? Because there was that long period in between where there was a flatlining at around 46-46, or to use your ABC Washington Post, I can't remember who does that poll, but it's a well-known firm. I get mixed up. I mean, there's so many people polling now, about 18. There were 18 at the last election, at the last American election. And Gallup, by the way, was 17th out of the 18, if there's any of you who've been following Gallup. And you'll see the Fox News, if you ever watch Fox News. I have Catholic taste. And Fox News or the Wall Street Journal editorials will fixate on Gallup, not realizing that they were next to the last man standing in terms of the poll accuracy 4 years ago in the United States. But my colleagues at Ipsos in America, Maury, I sold Maury to Ipsos about 7-8 years ago, and they have an operation in the United States that's run by two of the best in the business as far as I'm concerned, one of whom I trained, an American lady who was over here, and she worked for Maury for 3 or 4 years before she went over to Washington, went home. And she's in the thick of it, along with Cliff Young, who's a very, very good University of Michigan doctorate, worked in Brazil. His wife's Brazilian. He worked in Brazil for Ipsos for 7 years and then wanted to bring his child home to be educated in the United States. But at the beginning, day one of that two-week period, what you had was a four-point lead, 46-42, Obama over Romney. And then Romney did have a bounce. There was an argument about that, but I've said very firmly that in my belief that it was a three-point bounce. And the problem for Romney was it was a three-point bounce up, and then it was a three-point bounce down. Because what happened at the end of the Democratic convention 2 weeks later, they came out and Obama was 47 and Romney was 43. So they had each gained 1 point from the don't knows, as the Americans do, because all in this country, all the polls have a convention that when you're talking about an election and you're comparing it with election time last year and you're using swing analysis, which Americans don't use either, then we recalibrate it and we can do it in different ways. We can make our own judgments as to which way we think it would split based on what we know from details of the data in the weighting, so that we end up with 100% being accounted for. Because in elections, 100%, except in Ireland, of course, are what counts. In Ireland, I think it was last time, 118%, something like that. Actually, Chris Bauer, when he was editor of The Scotsman, took the party's canvas returns and figured out that 120% were going to vote in Scotland that year. So the swing was zero. Everybody know how to calculate swing? I'm sure you do. I gave a talk to the 41 top of the BBC people at the middle of the last election, the BBC College of Journalism. Two of the five managing directors were there. A lot of the senior, really senior people were there. And I said, how many of you can tell me how to calculate swing? They use it on all the time on their news broadcasts and comments and Newsnight and Today program. Swing, they talk about the swing. 41 people. Not a single hand went up. And I said, how many of you studied maths or physics or science of any sort or economics, econometrics? One person put up their hands. And I included the social scientists. There were virtually no social scientists there. So this is the track that I was going to show you that goes back to August anyway. Since then, it's closed, it's widened, it's closed, it's recovered, and now it's closed again. And if you look at the debates, you can see the little kick up with the red. Remember, that's the Republicans. And you can see the kick up that went there for the half dozen days, and then it went down again. The vice president debate continued, but not much in it, 1 or 2 percentage points. And these things are not statistically reliable in terms of a snapshot of one poll at one time. And this is that. But it's a daily tracking poll. And I think they're well bedded in, and they're right in the middle of the pack in terms of the pollsters. And so I make only that apology for pointing out that it's my colleagues at Reuters published by Reuters and the Ipsos team that I've got a lot of confidence in. So here we are tonight. That could be a game changer, because there's no question the first one was a game changer. And you can see how the red kicked right up after that and then stayed up and stayed up for quite a long time. If you do re-percentage, and where we are today, that is 2 days ago, because I took this, put it together last night, or updated it last night, and with the data from the day before's field work, and Obama-Biden had 50.5% and Romney-Ryan 49.5%, and that's how close it is in the popular vote. But long ago, 3, 4, 5 months ago, I said, forget the horse race, watch the Electoral College. Now I'm telling you, even more important is watch Ohio, because every American election for a long time has really been coalescing, balancing on the cusp of Ohio, Pennsylvania in some elections, not this year, that looks pretty solid, or Florida, Virginia. These are the states, and I'll show you those in a minute where they stand. Don't knows are 9%. We re-percentaged them proportionately. I think it was 47-46, and of course what you get is 50.5 and 49.5 when you do. So, regardless of the candidate you happen to support, who do you think did the better job in the debate? First debate, 2-1, Mitt Romney, 50-28, 22-point lead. Second debate, reversed, but not so much, 48-33, 15, an 18.5% swing. That is monumental. Now, swings A plus B divided by 2, and ignore the signs, and you divide by 2 because if you're saying that Mitt Romney won this time and that Barack Obama won that time, you're taking 1 away from Romney and you're putting 1 on Obama. It's as simple as that. Can't get much simpler in terms of algebra. So, in your opinion, and this is more important, I think, which candidate for the president has the better plan, policy, or approach to health care and to the U.S. economy? Because I think these are the two most important issues. But issues aren't as important in the United States elections as they are in the British elections. And they're not that important as they were anymore in the British elections. Because last time, there was a swing of 7 points between leader image and issues, so that at the time of that election, or in the run-up to that election, when we ask people, what are the among the three things that determine how you're going to vote after you've taken into consideration your core values, your habit, your commitment, and your track record? And that's 70% of the electorate. So if you look at those 30% who might be swing voters, might, then what you find is a trade-off between the issues and the importance of the issues on how they make up their mind how to vote, the leader image, and the party image. And between 2005 and 2010, there was a 7% swing to the leader image. By image, I'm not talking about how they part their hair, or whether they got any hair, or whether they're anything else to do with what people think of as image, but it's whether they believe they're capable, whether they believe they understand the problems facing the country, whether they understand world problems, whether they listen to the views of ordinary people, or whether they're out of touch or talk down to people, whatever. So those are the image factors that are important. But to take issues first, the two key issues, probably 60-65% of the determinants among issues are healthcare and the U.S. economy. Now, on healthcare, Obama's got a significant lead, 41-34. None say 13, and don't knows are 12. So you got a plus 7 there. And with the U.S. economy, this is 13 to the 17th of October. It's the last time they did this one. You've got 37-38, 12 and 12, and a minus 1. But the history is important. because when I first started looking at this and presenting this a month ago now, 3 weeks ago, Obama had a 16-point lead. Then it was 13. Then it was down to plus one after that first debate. And now it's back up to 7. That's a long way from 16. Economy, on the other hand, has been a dead heat, more or less. Obama had a 1-point lead 3 weeks ago, plus 5, increased 2 weeks ago, dropped to minus 4 a week ago, and now minus 1. Favorable or unfavorable, so President Barack Obama, and this is a significant point, 24-point favorability rating over Romney after the second debate, up from plus 10 before the debate. So a big swing there. You had 60% favorable to Obama and 40% unfavorable. So 40, 60 overall. But the strength is half again at 34% to the 22% who are very favorable to Romney. Now, those are the ground troops, and that makes a difference in this country and in that country. So a plus 20. Mitt Romney, very favorable, 21-22. 48, 52, minus 4. So that makes a 24-point favorability rating over Romney after the second debate. So he lost it on the first one, but he regained it on the second one, even though they more or less tied. Another advantage to Obama, and the reason I think Obama will still win, is with registered voters, 44-38, the strong Democrat and strong Republicans are 14-12, and now you're getting down to the really solid core supporters for the party as well as the candidate. And what you've got here is a significant 6 points difference, and that has varied between 6, 7, and 8 in every poll that I've seen over the last 3 months. So that's the core vote, and that's important. Obama just has 11 more votes to get a second term. If you look at the Ipsos Electoral College projection, which includes Ipsos USA data, but previous election outcome data, data from other pollsters and aggregated poll data, what you get is the strong Democrat support in the states that count, or all the states, but including the states that count, 259, it takes 270 to win. You get again 191. Now, it's a heck of a lot easier to get from 259 to 270 than it is to get from 191 to 270, believe you me. And if you take the toss-up Democrats, the ones that are leaning toward Obama, then what you get is 315. And I think back to when I said it was just over 300 in January, and I think 315 doesn't look a bad bet today. Furthermore, in those key states, what you've got here are the odds on the 10th, on the 13th, before and after the debate, and on the 18th, which is the last time I've been able to get them, a couple of days ago. And national, 75-25, a 3-to-1 bet, a 2-to-1 bet, a little bit less, on the 13th after the first debate, but bounced back, not all the way, to a 70-30 bet. 70-30 bet's not bad. I'll take your money. Ohio, at the moment, is 47%. 40 on the 10th, and most recently, plus 7, 48% of the determinant of the outcome of the election. So half the game is there. Obama, I read, is spending $40 million this month in Ohio against Romney's $20 million. And yet you see reported in newspapers that Romney's spending more money. Well, he ain't shooting where the ducks are flying, as they would have said in the Midwest where I grew up. Virginia has dropped from 16 down 7 points. Florida has dropped 7 points. Wisconsin's picked up 2, and I'm surprised Ryan has done no good for the Republicans in Wisconsin. He's a nerdy, too nerdy, I guess. Nevada, but anyway, the game is there in those three states, Ohio, Virginia, and possibly Florida, but Ohio's really the one that counts. So six talking points for you, and this is my conclusion. Attribution not required, not a problem. You can pretend you made it up all yourself. Yeah, Romney won the first debate, but so did Nick. Look what happened to Nick. He started with 57, he ended up with 57. If that election had been held that week, he'd have had 100 members of parliament and a lot more problems for the nation. A third of independents won't vote anyway. Don't knows, don't vote. People say, but what? I can remember Robin Day shouting at me at a dinner speech one time saying, but what about the don't knows? You never tell us about the don't knows. And I read out from that day's Times, where my poll had appeared, what the don't knows were saying. And, oh, don't wave that newspaper at me, he said. What can you do about that? So, of the don't knows, and they're down to practically nothing, and the independents, the Americans used to have, I vote for the man, not the party. Sorry, ladies. But that was the button that people were wearing back in the late Middle Ages when I was over there. 24%, I highlighted these before, 2007, it was 2007, not 2008, said they'd never vote for a Mormon, dropped now to 12%. No data I can find on those who think they'd never vote for a black man since 1965. I know it's there someplace, but I've sure not been able to find it. And 42% of Americans said in 1998 they're born-again Christians. Many are Tea Party types, natural core voters, as I said earlier. Therefore, will some right-wing Republicans stay home? I think they will, and that'll probably sink them. 12% of voters already say they voted already, and only 72% say they'll vote on the day. And one American in 25 says they'd rather have a tooth pulled than to watch the debate tonight. Thank you very much.